This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
I'm interviewing Dr. Richard Shaw from the University of Toronto. Welcome to the Jodcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
You've given a colloquium about using hydrogen to explore cosmology here at Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. And it reminded me of an interview we had not too long ago about a telescope called Bingo. And so it might be covering some of the same physics, but could you recap a little bit about how you're using hydrogen to look at the history of the universe?
Well, we're using hydrogen. We're using a particular transition that hydrogen has, where there's a flip between the proton and electron spins, being pointing in the same direction to them being in the opposite direction. And this emits light in the radio spectrum, 21 centimeters in wavelength. Now, this light with a powerful radio telescope, you can see from a very large distance, and you can use this to map hydrogen in the universe. So the idea is that where there is lots of hydrogen, you see this emission strongly, and where there is less hydrogen, you see it less strongly. And so if you just look out and make a map of the distribution of this light, that gives you an idea of where the hydrogen is. The hydrogen is essentially tracing the total distribution of matter in the universe, and you can use that to map the universe on very large scales.
So you're obviously interested in how the hydrogen is distributed around. How do you get an idea of depth in the universe, if that makes sense?
Because the universe is expanding, when the light is emitted from hydrogen, it starts off with a wavelength of 21 centimeters. But as the universe expands, that gets stretched. And so because of the way the universe expands, the light that was emitted longest ago is the furthest away. And so the light that's expanded the most, so it's redshifted the most, has come from the furthest distance. And you can use this redshifting as essentially a distance measure. So we know that because it was 21 centimeters to start with, light that is now 42 centimeters comes from a redshift of 1.
So you're looking at the expanding universe, essentially. And how far back can you look with this technique?
In theory, you can look back an extremely long way with this technique. So you can look back in time till a time after the Big Bang of about 300,000 or 400,000 years. And that seems like a long time to us now, but as the universe is about 14 billion years old, that's actually a very large fraction of the universe's age. However, in the local universe, which is what we're trying to probe with this, we're only looking back to about redshift of 3, which is only about 10 billion years.
But still quite an appreciable fraction of the universe's age.
It is indeed.
And this project that you're actually talking about was called CHIME, which is a nice name, Canadian Hydrogen Intensity Mapping Experiment. So when you use this, what's the instrument like that you're looking at, and what do you hope or expect to see?
It's a radio telescope. It's a radio interferometer. So the way it works is it combines signals from lots of individual antennas rather than having just a single antenna. However, it looks very different to most radio interferometers. And so rather than being the sort of classic radio dish, the sort of thing that you'd see on Contact or something like that, it's a very dense array. So rather than being all these individual dishes spread out, it's actually a set of very long sort of half cylinders, like a half pipe sort of shape. Each is 20 meters wide and 100 meters long, and there's 5 of them in a row. And so that makes basically a square 100 meters on each side. And above that, there's all sorts of individual radio antennas strung out. And it's the signals from those individual radio antennas that we combine together to map the sky, essentially.
So it's obviously a dedicated instrument. Why do you make it in this slightly unusual configuration? So I assume then you couldn't just take a normal radio dish and make the same sorts of measurements that you're looking for.
If we just took a radio dish of 100 meters wide, so there are telescopes of that size, they're the sort of biggest radio telescopes we have. What we achieve with our instrument is something that has the same kind of resolution on the sky as one of these radio telescopes of 100 meters in size, a single radio telescope. But we can see in many, many different directions at one time, which is unlike these, you know, just a normal kind of single dish radio telescope, which has the same resolution but can only see in one direction at once. And so by doing this, we can survey the sky, which is what we're interested in doing, extremely rapidly because we're looking simultaneously in a very large range of directions.
I see. So it's important to be looking at the whole of the sky, or as much as you can see and get hold of.
Yes, it is. We want to be seeing as much of the sky as possible. You know, we want to see as much as we can in the 2 or so years that we're going to be observing.
So you're talking about some really interesting things to do with the effects that we can measure in the expansion of the universe. So some listeners will probably know a bit about the cosmic microwave background, where there's this light from when the universe was very young, sort of encoded with this information about what they call the baryon acoustic oscillations. What I thought was remarkable was that you're able to pick up the same thing in the matter that's around us today, in the way that galaxies are distributed around the sky, and also in the way that hydrogen is distributed. So how do these oscillations end up making this imprint in the universe?
The cosmic microwave background, going back a long way, comes from a time when the universe was this very hot soup of photons, so particles of light, and baryons, sort of ordinary matter. Everything was so hot that it was just a single plasma. Now, in that plasma, sound waves are propagating around. So from the Big Bang, for 300,000 years, a sound wave can just propagate. As similar to throwing a stone on a pond, you have a ripple propagating outwards from a point. 300,000 years after the Big Bang, the universe cooled enough that the baryons, rather than being in this plasma, they formed neutral atoms, like hydrogen. And at that point, the baryons sort of drop out of these sound waves. In essence, their distribution becomes roughly fixed at that point. What we're seeing today in the baryon acoustic oscillations in the nearby universe, which we can see by looking at, say, the galaxy distribution, we're just seeing the tiny imprints left over from these sound waves propagating out. Although they've been sort of diluted by the processes that have gone on since then of increased clustering and galaxy formation and things like that, we can still see these residual ripples, which are about 5% of the sort of matter distribution on those scales.
So there's ripples in how galaxies are actually spread across the sky.
Exactly. If you look at the position of one galaxy and you ask what's the sort of probability of a galaxy being at a certain distance away, where this ripple is, it's 5% more likely for a galaxy to be at this particular distance than it would be if there wasn't these baryon acoustic oscillations, these sort of primordial sound waves.
Wow, that's remarkable. So the hydrogen, you were saying, largely there's a time in the universe's history where most of it gets, you described it as sort of being eaten away, I think, as being ionized. So the hydrogen that you're going to be observing with CHIME, where is that mostly located? Is that within galaxies as well?
Exactly. So it is mostly within galaxies. So initially, the universe is just full of hydrogen. After the cosmic microwave background is kind of formed, the universe is just full of neutral hydrogen. And this goes on for a very long time until the first massive stars essentially form. And they produce so much radiation, very high energy radiation, that it can actually ionize the hydrogen. And as you say, that happens and it eats away at the neutral hydrogen, forming these big ionized bubbles which expand and merge until almost all the universe is ionized. What happens is that in very dense environments like galaxies, you can still have neutral hydrogen surviving. Because it's very dense, it's possible for this to survive, essentially because in these dense environments, you have a very large number of particles that can interact with each other. And so every time one of these hydrogen atoms gets ionized, there's many more particles around it that can help it to recombine, to become neutral again. That's much easier in a dense environment when there's lots of other particles around. And so it's only in galaxies that you have these pockets of neutral hydrogen that really keep going.
And you still get that 21 centimeter signal out.
And yes, and you need these neutral gas for this 21 centimeter signal to come out. So that's in the very late universe, so redshift 3 and onwards, that's really where the signal comes from, is in galaxies.
And you showed a really nice graph as well, looking at what you're actually kind of finding out. There was a graph of supernovas at many different distances in the universe, and you were showing how the brightness of these supernova explosions was used to show that the expansion of the universe seems to be accelerating, which is how we get the idea of dark energy. So we've got that. What sort of new information or refined information could you get about the expansion of the universe from looking at the neutral hydrogen?
The way we're trying to find information about the expansion of the universe from the neutral hydrogen is by looking at these baryon acoustic oscillations, and they essentially give us a sort of standard ruler. You know, in this sense, a standard ruler is just a scale that you know how big it physically is. A standard ruler that we have is like a 30-centimeter piece of wood, and you know that's 30 centimeters long. What you can do with the standard ruler is, if you see it a long way away, and you know exactly how long it is, you can measure what its angular size is, so how big it looks in terms of an angle. And by measuring that and knowing how big it is, you can work out how far away it is. So in this case, sort of the angle times the distance how far away it is equal to the standard ruler's size. And so we can invert that, and we can figure out how far away our standard ruler is in this case. Now, that's a very important quantity. So what we can also work out is what the redshift of our standard ruler is, just by essentially the frequencies or wavelengths we're observing at tells us the redshift. In that case, what we now have is a distance that we've measured using this standard ruler to a certain redshift. And that's exactly what we're measuring with things like supernova. So we're measuring the distance to a certain redshift. That's measuring the expansion of the universe. Now, what you get by doing this instead of supernova is it's just a very different probe. So we can cover different ranges of redshifts with this. Supernovas are very good at low redshifts, and with this we hope to push towards higher redshifts. You're also susceptible to a very different set of biasing effects and errors that can mess up your observations. And so there are many things we don't understand about the supernova, and there's many things we don't understand about these baryon acoustic oscillations. And what we hope to do is, because they're different sets of things we don't understand, we hope to be able to combine these probes together in a more robust way.
Okay, so hopefully, well, perhaps, I don't know, depends on your point of view, hopefully they might agree with each other, or maybe it would be exciting if they didn't quite agree with each other.
If they don't agree with each other, that is exciting. That if we've gone through and we've checked off all the things we don't understand and they still don't agree with each other, then that tells us something new about the universe that we weren't expecting.
So with supernovas, I guess it's just that we think we know how bright they are intrinsically, and that helps us to establish how far away they are, but we can't be absolutely sure that we're absolutely definitely right and they're always the same brightness.
Exactly. That's the problem with supernova is really just, as you say, is just knowing that we know exactly how bright they are. There's many other effects that can go in and change that. And then this is the similar problem with the baryon acoustic oscillations. It's all about knowing how long that standard ruler really is, which comes from our theory of the cosmology. So actually, it's the cosmic microwave background, really, that tells us how long this standard ruler is, and our current understanding of cosmology.
Great. Well, perhaps the last one. This one might be a little bit of a difficult question, but you were explaining that the signal that you're looking for, this 21-centimeter signal, is actually up to a million times smaller than all the annoying rest of the universe that we call foregrounds that kind of gets in the way. And you were talking a little bit about how you propose to remove the foregrounds. How can you clear away something that's a million times bigger than what you want to see?
That's right. That's the big problem with making these measurements of baryon acoustic oscillations with this 21-centimeter technique. When we do this, we hope to be looking directly at the 21-centimeter radiation, but we're not. Our own galaxy is much brighter than that. And other galaxies that we're looking at also shine much brighter than that. We see them as distant, bright specks. Now, the way we hope to separate them is that if we look through as a function of frequency, the foregrounds, our galaxy and the other galaxies, tend to be extremely smooth. The brightness we see is just a very, very smooth function of frequency. That's not true of the 21-centimeter. So when we look at different frequencies at the 21-centimeter radiation, what we're really looking at is different slices through the universe. And those we don't expect to be smooth, because we're slicing through different galaxies and different galaxy clusters and just really looking at different sets of structure. And so the way we hope to be able to get digging down through the emission of our own galaxy to this 21-centimeter signal is by really just looking for the signal that looks rough as a function of frequency. So we want to throw away any signal which looks smooth. And I think we believe that we can do that well enough, and that the signal from our own galaxy is smooth enough that we can use this to dig down this factor of a million to get down to the 21-centimeter signal.
And do you use information that's been gathered from other observations as well, or would it be the information that's just within the survey that Chime does?
Mostly we just use the information which comes from Chime itself. I think other probes and other surveys have been crucial in telling us that this radiation from our own galaxy is smooth. That combined with our sort of theoretical understanding of how the emission in our galaxy works, you know, that's what tells us it's smooth. For doing this cleaning of the light from our galaxies, you know, that we usually only really use the information from our own observations.
And just as a very last question then, how long do you think the actual Chime survey will take? When do you expect it to get going and be completed?
We've yet to build the full-size instrument. That should be starting to be constructed later this year. We currently have an instrument which is roughly half size, so rather than 100 metres by 100 metres, it's 40 metres by 40 metres. And we're currently getting to grips with how that works. I expect that by the time we've got a lot of data and we've started to understand how it works and we've really started churning through the analysis of the data and removing these the bright signal from our own galaxy, that might take 5 or 6 years.
Well, that's not too long on an astronomical timescale, given that the light's been around for a few billion years.
Exactly.
Well, that's really interesting. It just shows that there's lots of different approaches to cosmology. So thank you very, very much for that.
Well, thank you for having me.